And there he is.
There he is.
Did I make it? Did I make it to coffee break today?
40 seconds to spare.
Looks like you did.
Welcome to the coffee break, guys. I kind of need coffee. Everybody doing well?
Yeah. Oh,
yes.
And today, of course, is the 11th of May, 2020, because after 50 days of consecutive coffee breaks, we finally missed one. So yesterday there was no coffee break. So what happened is it was Sunday morning. And as you may or may not know, Pastor Jen Wagger, who you may remember, New Every Day, first three seasons, she does her church services at the studio. So I was in the middle of that, and my NEM server went off telling me that the Category 5 main web server was offline. So, of course, that's at the co-location facility. And so I'm like, okay, well, I can't leave in the middle of their church service. So I waited just until they left, and then I zipped over to the co-location facility. And it turns out it was just the power supply was dead. So single point of failure. Yay.
Yeah. Is it a server that that can have two PSU units?
No, it's actually a neat little thing. It's called a Fitlet 2. So it's a little microcomputer, and it runs our website and our RSS feeds and everything else. It's a powerful little beast, like 16 gigs of RAM, and but it does just have a single 12 volt power supply. So I thought maybe I could take two 12-volt power supplies and put them in a parallel circuit so that if one fails, the other one will pick up the slack. Thought maybe that would be a good idea. Just make a little circuit.
You need diodes in between them. Stop one trying to push power into the other one. You need a set of diodes. Stop one pushing the power into the other. You need a set of diodes.
Anyone catch that?
He says you need diodes, Robbie, to stop power from leaking from one power supply to the other.
Diode.
So make sure you put diodes in place. They are designed to only let power flow in one direction.
Oh, clever. Oh, okay. So that will prevent it from feeding back another
stop the
back into the
flow.
Other power supply.
Yeah, that'll stop
very
the back
cool.
flow.
Oh, thanks, guys.
If you get shockley ones, get shockley ones.
It should be a pretty simple circuit to do something like that. Although, I mean, it's been running on this thing for 5 years, I'd say, and this is the first time the power supply has ever died. So, and we were only down for an hour. So, but it was right at that. So what I normally
time,
would do
right?
on Sunday. Yeah, well, on Sunday. So after they leave, it's like, you know, quarter to noon, and then I do the coffee break from noon until 12:30. That's why I'm at the studio on Sundays right now.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, as soon as they left, I got in the van and headed to the co-location.
Yeah.
So I was at the server at 12 o'clock.
I was thinking to myself when I finally noticed the Twitter posting that you did in front of the co-location rack. I was thinking to myself, no wonder the server is offline. It's completely missing.
How'd you finally fix
an empty rack?
Shockley diodes, because they got a low conduction. They got that when they draw current, they get the board voltage. You know, about 0.1 of a volt. So you get the 0.1 Shockley diodes, the power ones you want.
Yeah, I'll look it up, Peter. I appreciate the tip, but I will use diode as my Google search query, and I'm sure I'll find what I'm looking for.
He's saying there's a specific type of diode called a Schottky, okay. Schottky, I believe that's how it's spelled.
Check it out.
So make sure you get those type of diodes.
Okay. I can't wait until Sayal opens up again. We have a local old school Radio Shack style store.
Perfect.
You can just
get you what
everything.
You need. Yeah.
But they're closed for the day.
Peter, I would suggest that, Peter, that you send Robbie an email about the specifics.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's that?
I was going to say, Robbie, they only conduct a 0.1 of a volt.
Sorry, Tolbu, I didn't catch you there.
Sorry.
Peter, best thing to do, Peter, is just send Robbie an email with the details, and that'll help him understand it a whole lot better than if you do this over voice.
Yeah.
So how do you finally fix it, Robbie?
BP9 has like some kind of magical hearing. He really does.
No, I wouldn't say
that.
He's
been learning for almost 2 months.
Sorry, Lance, man. I'll get there. Okay. So what did I do? So when I came in, the power on the server was off. So I figured it's either the entire thing has exploded internally or the power supply. So, hey, let's start with the power supply. So unplugged that, took it down to the workbench and hooked a multimeter up to it. And I was getting 8 volts consistently. Looked at the power supply and it says it's supposed to be feeding 12. So I'm okay. Well, that's not right. So I grabbed, we've got a good supply of power supply. So I grabbed another 12 volt, 3 amp adapter and checked it. And I was getting a good 12 volts. So plugged it in and fired her up, came back online.
Yeah, I had that happen to me 10 years ago, or maybe more. My DSL modem, it turned out to be the DSL modem. I came home after church or whatever, and noticed that my entire network was down. No computer had access to anything. Yeah. I figured out that it was my gateway computer. It looks like it had died. So I rebooted it, and I still couldn't connect to it.
No DHCP?
It had a static IP, and all my computers had to have a static IP. And if I have guests, they need the DHCP. But then I unplugged the screen from one of my computers onto that system, and no, sure not, it was even online and connected to the internet with a very slow speed. And then I figured out that it was the DSL modem, it was the power supply to the DSL modem that has
same deal, yeah.
And it generated some noise and for some reason that I still don't understand, it ended up that my Linux desktop router lost connection with my local area network, but not it did not lose connection to the DSL modem for some reason, so.
So, Boo, I bet I can tell you what happened there. Probably your DNS went down. And if your router was the gateway. Oh, wait, you said the DSL modem.
Yeah.
I'm thinking the gateway or the DNS went down or something and stopped each of your computers on your local network from talking to each other.
No, my local computer could. I have a switch. I had a switch that was still powered on, so my computers had internal access to each other via static IP. But they had not access to the gateway system. And as soon as I unplugged the DSL modem, all access to my gateway computer was up again. Only by unplugging the DSL modem.
Strange.
Yeah. So I had another switchable power supply that I could switch from 5 volts up. So I gave it the correct amount of, and I used that until I switched ISP a year later. So.
Can you hear me now better, Robbie? Can you hear me better now? Can you hear me better now, Robbie?
We'll say it comes and goes, Peter.
You obviously got the email from you about the Scottish Tart, and did you get that one? Yeah, have you read that one yet?
What's that, Peter?
About the Scottish Tart, and remember I said I'll talk about Scottish Tart, and I'll send you an email with the information on I think it's at Country 5 TV somewhere. I sent you an email about the Scottish Tart and being somebody did a fraud where they fabricated patents where they shouldn't have done in the 1820s. I think I'll send it to you an email. I sent up any information I have. I'm sorry about my voice, all very good today. And I will send you also an email with a diode on for you and information about Shockley's Nazi diodes. I won't repeat them by Nazi diodes because the guy was a raving Nazi.
I'm not making you. I'm not able to make you out, Peter. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You guys doing better than I am.
Go ahead and send an email, Peter, and I think Robbie will make more sense of it once you do that.
I will read it aloud on tomorrow's coffee break.
Yeah, there's no point doing this over voice, Peter. It's just not coming through.
I'll use my best radio voice. And Peter, at that moment, if you could just sit back in the frame and move your mouth, and
this weekend, which no soul boo, I didn't watch a video, although I did see some YouTube videos about this. Gopher. Does anybody remember Gopher?
Gopher.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're too young for this. You wouldn't remember this.
Give me a hint. What is it? Is it a proxy or something?
Gopher protocol. It is a service.
And I can't recall what it is. Remember it.
It does. That's right, Sobu. You got it. It predates web browsers. It was originally built by the University of Minnesota as a way to disseminate information over the internet. Originally, it was supposed to be campus-wide, but it very soon exploded. But I've been trying to understand that. See, the thing is that, there's a few people who are frustrated about how, various corporations have taken over websites, the big four, Microsoft, Google, Amazon, all that. And pretty much you can't touch a website unless they put it up there. Not only web browsing, but ads and all the rest of it. It's just, there's a very, very small bunch of folks. And I do say small because it doesn't really look like it's taken any traction. But Gopher is a much simpler text only way of disseminating information. That was how it was way back in the old Amazing. Old days, back in the 70s, 80s, up until the early 90s. It's like it sort of died, but there may yet be a bit of a resurgence of it. I'm curious to see if anybody even remembers Gopher.
That'll be our next feature. It reminds me of like television back in those early days.
Black and white TV?
No. When they would show the internet and it was like a text-based.
Oh, sure.
Like look at X-Files or something.
Or teletext on the TVs. Remember those?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, those were the days. Yeah. Boy, I'm old.
My first experience with Gopher was 20 years ago, I started using the Opera web browser. It had up until version 12 or something, it still had you could cook and configure a Gopher proxy.
Yep. Even the modern browsers, Firefox, and I think SeaMonkey is the email. I don't think that's the browser, but certainly Netscape Navigator had it. But they have actually recently, as in a few years ago, stopped all access to Gopher. They don't allow it anymore.
There's a pretty good Wikipedia article about it.
Yes, there is. Yes,
yeah,
there is.
I think there are still some active servers still running.
And a few are starting up, but very notably, University of Minnesota have actually shut down their Gopher server. And I've been reading up on it because I'm trying to figure out what's the attraction of Gopher even now, and I haven't quite figured that out yet. I certainly get no ads for sure. And I said, but it's going to be a much, much simpler interface. And and there's not much options in terms of how you format up your pages. It's basically there's text on the screen, or there's a directory, or there's a file you can download or read. If it's a text file,
it would run like lightning on today's servers.
Well, absolutely. Oh, I get that. I get that for sure. The biggest drawback that I can think of at the moment is that there is no full text searching like there is with DuckDuckGo or Google or whatever, right?
Right.
They did have search engines, Archie, Veronica, Jughead. They were search engines, but they only searched the title of the document or the what they call the selector. They don't actually search the entire text of the document.
So they couldn't search across files?
They could search across multiple servers and files, absolutely, but the search results they returned were only the search any terms that were in the title of the document, the actual body of the document.
Okay.
So if you had a dissertation or something that went into all kinds of details about whatever the subject was, you could not search for that by anything that was inside the document. You could only search for it by what was on the title. So you had to hope that the title was descriptive as possible.
Yeah.
So
you have to be really good at writing titles.
Well, yeah. Or, you know, these days you could probably have a go at writing a full text search engine. And
there you go.
But you know, question is, would you put any effort into something like that if there was any kind of traction on Gopher? And I'm not sure it's there yet. I'm not sure it's worth spending the time on it. But
Would it be so lightweight though that you could set up like a Raspberry Pi Gopher server?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what I'm thinking. Like,
and
like
in fact, that's exactly what I'm thinking of doing. I've got a spare port on my modem. I'm thinking of just chucking a Gopher server up on the interwebs, just literally plugging it directly into the router, and just going with it.
Speaking of old servers, I remember 15 years ago, I'd stumble across. It was and still is the oldest web server still running. It was someone, he works at a Dutch ISP, so he and a few colleagues have a rack in their office that they can put in what they want. So he mounted in that rack shelf an old 286 computer, desktop computer, and he 20 megahertz computer, which is stepped down to 18 in order to be stable, and he installed a Minix on it, and it has a web page, and he won an award many years ago for the most obsolete in web server.
Nice.
So I imagine that the Gopher protocol is excellent for old hardware.
Oh, just absolutely right. It's true.
Even dog thinks that.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the Gopher protocol is all text. Now, granted, you can download binary files, so there's nothing stopping you downloading GIF files or PNG files or binaries, you know, like executables or tar files or zip files or anything like that. You can absolutely do that.
There's your use case scenario right there, the dark web.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if Gopher was the protocol that they used in the late 60s, early 70s. There's a video of it was surfaced as part of the lawsuit in 2000 about who owned the Linux code and so on, and who owned the various parts. And as part of that, a video surfaced where the very first use of a mouse where they were browsing the DARPANET at the time. I'm wondering if Gopher was one of the protocols that they used to demonstrate that.
It's entirely possible, Sobu, because people forget that that there are a lot of services and protocols that run on the internet. The World Wide Web does not equal to the internet. There are a whole bunch of other services that run on the internet that are not World Wide Web. It just happens that World Wide Web picked up traction and became the dominant. Yes, became
it's the dominant protocol. Dominant.
Well, yeah.
Because, like, who knows what's actually running through these cables?
Oh, just fire up Wireshark and you'll find out real quick. find out real quick.
I'm using a 30-year-old protocol on my computer right now, and it's called IRC. It was launched in 1988.
There you go. And Lanceman, you've got the Wikipedia page up, don't you? You said you found it on Wikipedia. Did it say? He's not answering. Lanceman?
I'm sorry, what?
I was just asking, you have it up on Wikipedia, don't you? What was the, when did Gopher start? I want to say early 80s.
It says it's a protocol, communications protocol designed for distributing, searching, and retrieving documents.
Yeah.
It says that it gave way to HTTP. It was invented by a team led by Mark P. McCahill at the University of Minnesota.
Yeah, when?
Its text menu interface is well suited to computing environments that rely heavily on remote text-oriented computer terminals, which were still common at the time of its creation in 1991.
Okay. Early 90s. Okay.
91. Wow. Yeah.
That was before, the internet had started, but it was about the same time as when the World Wide Web really started kicking off as well.
It started in the same.
They were head to head. Yep. They were head-to-head. Mm-hmm. So
it's hard to believe that very the internet's only that old.
Well,
I can't imagine a world without it.
I know. See, you're too young, Robbie, to notice.
No, I'm not. I ran a BBS for years, man.
Oh, okay. All right.
I was a Teleguard guy, and then later went into, once Teleguard was, considered obsolete, I started working with some of the more graphical stuff.
Wow.
There is a few BBS networks still running. I'm trying to find
out. Oh, yeah, there still are. Like,
you mean like that you dial up to get into?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Gopher would be perfect for that because it's pure text. Very little in the way of graphics. Yeah.
You remember BBSs that were all text?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Everything on my BBSs was all text-based, although like we'd have door games and things like that that were all like high ASCII characters, and you'd play like an RPG where you're just like this little stick man made of ASCII characters.
Absolutely,
all text-based, but we made it work.
The largest BBS network, the BBS networks that was the largest is still running.
IDONET?
Yeah, it's still running.
Is it really?
I imagine so.
FidoNet's still up?
Yes.
And they were the original bringers of email that was inter-BBS compatible. Mm-hmm. So you could get onto my BBS and send an email, and then it would dial out to FidoNet after you disconnect, and it would send your email to whichever node it is that you're connected.
I remember nodes.
Yeah.
We had a variant of that in ham radio as well.
Yeah. And many of the BBS networks ended up as many of the ISP that we had ISP style that we have today. Then they merged into that.
Yeah, Prodigy and all those.
Most of the history about BBSs I learned about when Jason Scott. He's one of the. People behind the archive .org. He made a documentary in the late 2000s about the BBS and the early years. It's 8-part documentary that is available on DVD and is also legally available on YouTube for everyone to use. So I urge everyone to watch that BBS the documentary.
The documentary, nice.
Yeah, and one of the the last last part was history about compression. It was a race about creating compressed software. And one of the most popular software was actually pirated by someone. The PKZip tools. That was right. That was stolen. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that until I watched that documentary. So
yeah, we take for granted thinking that zip format is non-proprietary and you know it's available everywhere. But no, that's the proprietary tech. Yeah, reverse engineered by how many people? That's cool, yeah. Man. Wow, that takes me back.
Those were the days, weren't they, Robbie?
Oh, yeah.
Back when I was a lad.
Back when we had to makeshift everything. Like, everything was... You talk about compression. It's like we were trying to figure out ways to get our door games to work on 9600 baud modems. Like,
oh, sure.
Because, you know, you didn't want to have lag, if you will, or... slowdowns and things like that, and then having like 10 or 15 phone lines coming into the house so that more people could connect.
A friend of mine gave me an old modem. It didn't work, but I had it as just for some history reasons. It was an old 2400 baud modem, and it had a switch where you can switch down to 1200.
Yeah,
I had an old 300 baud modem. It was because it was in Australia. It was CCITT, not Bell standard, so it used a different set of tones than what American modems did. So if I were prepared to pay like a dollar a minute to make an international call to a
American BBS, forget that you're online,
it would not
and leave
it
running.
It would not connect, but I still got charged my dollar a minute for trying, you know, because the modem at the other end actually answered.
Man.
But it had two switches. It had originate and answer switch, so the tones would flip.
Yeah.
If you wanted somebody to call you, you flip on answer, and then when they called, you would then, flip the switch to bring the modem online. So two switches, one to bring the modem online, one for answer, one for original. Flip between the two. So
that was a horribly dark
300 bits per second. Unbelievable.
I think a friend of mine still has some old telephone equipment, the old modem where you put the receiver in.
The acoustic couplers.
I think he still has one of those.
Yeah, the acoustic couplers, absolutely. And I used Tapsis on CompuServe back then with a... I don't remember if it was with the 300 baud modem or not, but I think I'd upgraded to a 9600 baud at that point. So it was, I was in heaven, man. I was in heaven. But it might have been 1200 baud, and I'm just exaggerating because, you know.
You're mentioning of a computer. That reminds me of one of the possibilities that I remember that Windows 95 had built in. It had something called the Microsoft Network. I'm wondering if anyone of you used it at one time.
No. I mean, I dallied with Windows back in Australia, and I mean, the fact is Windows. It's there.
Yeah.
But
always has been.
But I
yeah.
Did. I mean, I was messing with Slackware in those days, and I was. I was trying to get Linux up and running even back then.
So you didn't have Microsoft DOS?
MS-DOS, yeah. MS-DOS and DR-DOS, absolutely. But
yeah.
I stayed on that CPM machine that I showed off a few weeks ago now. That was my main machine for many years. That was
I didn't see that one.
Oh, I have a
Clipper. You'll have to go back.
Yeah.
Did you use before you started with Slackware, did you ever use a Unix?
No. Only ever used Linux.
Yeah.
because it was too expensive to actually purchase any copy of, you know, commercial Unix. There wasn't any.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons that that total stopped.
I know.
The kernel.
And I'm forever grateful.
Doing the, when he started doing the kernel, a single user license was 20,000 Finnish marks.
Gotta go, guys.
Right.
Take it easy. See you tomorrow.
Thank you, Robbie. Enjoy.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. He's gone. Bang. Just like that. All righty then. Bye, Robbie.
Yeah.